Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we're going to do some news.
And then we're going to have an interview with John Brennan, who is a regular on our FM show. He talks about chemtrails, and that's an important thing to keep people up on. So we'll be bringing that to you as well. All right, Irish for Palestine. Seriously, America, how is your president supposed to do what is best for America and what is best for the Middle East peace process when you allow Zionists like AIPAC to run your country? As if we needed another example of the power of AIPAC over politicians. It is reported that New York Senator Kristen Gillibrand, Democrat replacement for Hillary Clinton's seat, has been taught a lesson by AIPAC. Imagine this silly girl actually thinking that her job was to best represent the American people and the American government. Gillibrand had the audacity to make this statement after taking the Senate seat. She would advocate the best policy and most effective solutions for Israel, regardless of what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wants to do. And she wasn't entirely against the idea of pressure on Israel, saying that positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement would be a good strategic decision for the administration and our Secretary of State. Whoopsie, Kirsten. Did you get that statement approved by AIPAC? I guess not. See below. You bad, bad senator, you cannot represent America. You must represent Israel. Otherwise, you will be taught a lesson by AIPAC, the real group who runs America. Evidently, Kirsten's lesson came recently when Gillibrand was hauled in to meet with Robert Cohen, AIPAC's national board member. Then Kirsten had a sudden epiphany and emerged with a brand new statement. I share AIPAC's vision for a secure, prospering Israel, and I pledge to use my seat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to continue building on the strong friendship America and Israel share. Gillibrand talked to AIPAC. The newest senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, said not long after she was appointed that she would advocate the best policy and most effective solutions for Israel, regardless of what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wants to do. And she wasn't entirely against the idea of pressure on Israel either, saying that positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement would be a strategic decision for the administration and our Secretary of State. Those comments may not have been popular with some of her constituents. And that's exactly what happened. So, and that little thing has been repeated. So, she's been a strong voice advocating for the support for Israel, while in the House of Representatives, Senator Gillibrand co-sponsored critical legislation to recognize Israel's right to defend itself against attacks from Gaza and reaffirm America's strong support for Israel. But she was really pressured, and I don't know whether she was given money.
Probably money, and she was threatened.
Because she came out with a statement which made one to believe that the policy that she would promote would be a little bit more even-handed, but she was taken to the woodshed.
Absolutely.
Or the bank, or both.
And something else that came up that I thought should be, regarding this, that there are so many things on the problems with pressure by the lobbyists and by the Israeli lobby that I wanted to talk about something here that, yeah, I would, this one here, Lila can read this one as well.
Okay.
Let me just read this quickly, and U.S. to abandon Israel over Iran.
That's a scary thing.
Yeah, this is by Press TV. Now, as Israeli threats of war against Iran encounter stiff opposition in the U.S., the new administration mulls over imposing sanctions on Tel Aviv. U.S. President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton are mulling over a plan to impose sanctions against Israel if the right-wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu implements its long-sought policy of countering Iran's nuclear activities by taking military action against the country. According to a report by RIA Novosti, the Obama White House is on a collision course with long-standing Israeli plans to launch a military strike on Iranian nuclear infrastructure. And Washington favors diplomatic pressures, or measures rather, at least for as long as the Obama administration believes there is room for the pursuit of plans to engage Iran diplomatically over its nuclear case. But President Obama has been making efforts to put his belief into practice that America should talk to its adversaries such as Iran, Syria, North Korea, and Venezuela. However, such hawkish Prime Minister Netanyahu took office, since he took office rather, Israel has been buzzing with rumors of possible military strikes. Military strike on Iran's nuclear site if the United States fails to achieve progress in the talks with Iran. Earlier on Wednesday, Israel's Home Front Command announced plans to mobilize the Israeli army as well as the public to hold the largest military exercise in history on June 2nd. And the head of Israel's Department of Population of the Home Front Command said by holding this week-long military exercise, Israel seeks to transform the population from a passive to an active one. We want the citizens to understand that war can happen tomorrow morning. And that war, meaning, you know, they'll start their own war. I mean, Iran's not planning a war with them. But according to DEPCO, which is believed to be closely connected with the Israeli spy agency Mossad, and that's actually a website if you can go through DEBKA, his main consideration is that Israel expects to be embroiled in a major military confrontation in the next few months with Iran, Hamas, or Hezbollah, or at least three at once, or all three at once, rather. Netanyahu expects threat of war on Iran as part of this top priority policy of policing, of stopping Iran's nuclear program, and what he sees as its ambition to dominate the region comes in a stark contrast with the approach of Israel's most powerful ally, the United States. In an attempt to convince Israel about the U.S. policy vis-a-vis Iran, Secretary of State described the Bush administration's failed 8 years attempts for the total isolation of Iran as a failure earlier in the week. And the Bush policy did not deter Iran one bit in its ambitions to acquire nuclear weapons and to support terror organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas. And the new U.S. move to take a stand against Israeli war threats on Iran comes after U.S. Vice President Joe Biden warned Israel against any such military action, saying the Netanyahu government would be ill-advised to strike Iran's nuclear facilities. And U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, on his part, warned that any Israeli strike on Iran would have dangerous consequences. An attack on Iran would cement their determination to have a nuclear program and also build into the whole country an undying hatred of whoever hits them, Gates cautioned. So I'm extremely glad that to see this happening. You know, for once, they're starting to back away from Israel.
Okay.
All right, so, and hopefully that'll happen.
This article is from uruknet.info. Egyptian media, Israel bombed Iranian arms ship allegedly headed for Gaza, April 26. According to a report in the Egyptian newspaper El Aosaboa, on Sunday, a recent attack on an Iranian ship off the coast of Sudan was carried out by the Israeli Navy with possible U.S. involvement. After January's Israeli invasion of the Gaza, there have been several incidents of Israeli attacks on what they have claimed were arms shipments from Iran bound for the Gaza. No Palestinian group has ever claimed a connection with Iran, and the homemade shells fired by Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza are mainly made of homemade materials lacking any sophistication that would imply Iranian involvement. In January, an aerial bombardment of convoy trucks in Sudan was claimed to be an Israeli Air Force attack on Iranian arms shipment, but neither side confirmed this claim. In February, the government of Cyprus detained a ship that they claimed was headed for Gaza with anti-tank and anti-mortar weapons. Neither the U.S. nor Israel have issued any statements regarding Sunday's attack. However, Israeli politicians in the new administration have stepped up rhetoric against Iran at the same time that the new administration in Washington has called for direct talks. Whether or not Iran has been trying to get weapons into Gaza is a matter of much speculation among political analysts in the region. What is clear on the ground, however, is that if Iran has smuggled weapons to Gaza, the Palestinian resistance has not used them, as the sporadic homemade shelling that they engage in continues to use the crude homemade weaponry that lacks any aiming capability or consistency.
And one more article on Iran, and then we'll go to another subject here. But Iran's president, Ahmadinejad, has recognized Israel's right to exist for the first time, saying it would be fine with us if the Palestinians reach a two-state solution. This is by telegraph.co.uk. And asked if he would support an agreement between the Palestinians and Tehran's archenemy, he said, "Whatever decision they take is fine with us. We are not going to determine anything. Whatever decision they take, we will support that. We think that is the right of the Palestinian people. However, we fully expect other states to do so as well." And excuse me. Given his frequent stated hostility to Israel's existence, calling more than once for its annihilation, and his habit of capriciously offering threats and compromise of friendship within the space of a few days, Mr. Ahmadinejad's words were not treated by Western diplomats as a permanent shift in policy. He has previously declared that Israel should be wiped off the map, and a week ago accused the Israelis of running the most cruel and repressive racist regime. But his comments are now in the open and cannot be taken back. They will provide the Obama administration and its European partners significant encouragement that he is prepared to move beyond the mutual hostility of the Bush era and negotiate an Iran nuclear program, which the West is convinced is designed to produce nuclear weapons as soon as possible. In the interview with ABC News, George Stephanopoulos in the Iranian capital, Mr. Ahmadinejad seemed unsure how to react to Mr. Obama's friendly overtures, which have included a message to the Iranian people on their national day praising their great civilization. He ruled out talks between the U.S. and Iran without preconditions, but welcomes talks with clear guidelines. When asked whether he shares Mr. Obama's vision for a new relationship with Iran, Mr. Ahmadinejad said, "In the last 29 years, different U.S. administrations have opposed the Iranian people. Now they say that we are giving up that enmity. We have given up that enmity, and that's fine. We have welcomed such comments, but an administration which, up until yesterday, was saying that I'm going to kill you, and today says that I'm going to kill you, is that sufficient?" He continued to question the Holocaust, even though aggressive comments about Israel at a UN conference on racism in Geneva last week prompted a walkout by European delegations. "If this is indeed a historical event," he said, "of the murder of 6 million Jews by Nazis, why do they want to turn it into a holy thing? And nobody should be allowed to ask any questions about that." Mr. Ahmadinejad faces elections in June and has yet to receive the support of conservative blocs that supported him 4 years ago. He has been criticized more for poor management of the economy more than for his foreign policy. So it's kind of interesting how he's turning around, or at least lightening up a little bit.
But he really doesn't run the country. That Ayatollah does.
Yeah, but he's still,
I don't understand their political system, but it's the Ayatollah that really runs the country.
It's a theocracy, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's run by, you know, the
Ayatollah,
yeah. The high guru guy. So, anyway,
something else here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted. Would you read this one?
I haven't read it. No.
No, this one.
Zimbabwe admits raiding private bank accounts by Angus Shaw, Associated Press writer from Salon.com. Harare, Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's central bank governor admitted Monday that he took hard currency from the bank accounts of private businesses and foreign aid groups without permission, saying he was trying to keep his country's cash-strapped ministries running. In a statement that would be unthinkable coming from most central banks, Reserve Bank Governor Gideon Gono appeared to be issuing a plea to keep his job in the face of growing criticism. Gono said it was time to let bygones be bygones, now that Zimbabwe has a new coalition government dedicated to reversing its economic decline. The central bank has said, gave the money he took from the hard currency accounts as loans to various ministries, and those private accounts would be reimbursed when the ministries repaid the loans. He said the bank's efforts sustained the country in its hour of need. Gono's statement showed that practice was widespread. It was first hinted at last year when the international aid agency Global Fund threatened to cut off funds to Zimbabwe for fighting AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria unless money taken from its account was returned. The central bank returned $7.3 million to Global Fund. The raiding of foreign currency accounts is just one of the highly questionable actions for which Gono has been sharply criticized. In the past 2 years, Gono slashed 25 zeros from the local currency, printed more local money without backup reserves or assets, and distributed agricultural equipment to many in President Robert Mugabe's party who were given farms seized from whites. Gono declared Monday that the criticism of his office had reached ridiculous dimensions in the name of trying to show how evil, unworthy, and incompetent the governor is. All this is being done to an effort to show the central bank governor killed the economy single-handedly, a statement said. It is even being argued in some circles the donors must not put money into the Reserve Bank until the governor is relieved of his duties. Last year, before a unity government deal was signed in September, Mugabe reappointed Gono to a second five-year term. Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's party, the former opposition, objected, saying the power-sharing deal gave it a say in the appointment of key state posts. Attacks on Gono have stepped up in recent days after he offered about 50 used cars to new lawmakers from both Mugabe's party and its longtime rival, Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change. Controversy over the cars has led to calls for an investigation into central bank operations, ranging from the purchase of its cutlery to businesses that Gono runs on the side. In a statement Monday, Gono called on lawmakers to return the cars, but said that the offer was well meant. Let's see if there's anything on the second page. Okay, more to come here. Gono said lawmakers asked for the cars so they could travel around the country to preach the message of economic reform and national reconciliation under the coalition formed February 16th. The coalition partners have pledged to work together to confront Zimbabwe's crippling poverty, collapsed utilities, chronic shortages of food and basic goods. An estimated two-thirds of Zimbabweans are in need of food, and a cholera epidemic has sickened more than 80,000 people and killed more than 4,000 since August. Zimbabwe's economic crisis has been blamed on a land redistribution campaign that Mugabe began in 2000. The number of white farmers has dropped from 4,000 to 400, and farms have ended up in the hands of Mugabe cronies. Mugabe, however, blames Western sanctions for his country's economic woes. I guess I've been pronouncing his name wrong, Mugabe.
Yeah.
I don't know how. Oh, there's an A there.
Yeah.
Mungabe. Sorry. Salon people probably didn't even know what I was talking about. Salon provides breaking news articles from the Associated Press as a service to its readers, but does not edit the AP articles it publishes. So that was Robert Mungabe. Sorry. Mugabe.
You turned him into an Englishman there.
I did. I apologize to him for that and to our listeners for being offended by my pronunciation where I practically killed his name.
It is, but that's all right. Mugabe is probably just as
Mugabe.
Mugabe. But anyway, one more we're going to bring up John Brennan's interview in a few minutes, but I wanted to, this one's too, the lettering is a little too small here for Lila. But,
no, I couldn't
but
do
I,
that.
Maybe she could read this one on the world of pandemic, a swine flu deal, but you can look at that one. However, the effects of fluoride on the thyroid gland, this was by Namast magazine. It's called The Effects of Fluoride on the Thyroid Gland by Dr. Barry Dorrit Pitfield, medical advisor to Thyroid UK. There is a daunting amount of research studies showing that the widely acclaimed benefit on fluoride dental health are more imagined than real. My main concern, however, is the effect of sustained fluoride intake on general health. Again, there is a huge body of research literature on this subject freely available and in the public domain. This body of work was not considered by the York Review when their remit was changed from studies of the effects of fluoride on health to studies on the effects of fluoride water on health. It is clearly evident that it was not considered by the BMA, or British Medical Association, British Dental Association, British Fluoridation Society, and Faculty for Public Health and Medicine, since they all insist, as in the briefing papers to members of Parliament, that fluoridation is safe and non-injurious to health. This is a public disgrace. I will now show by reviewing the damaging effects of fluoridation with special reference to thyroid illness. It has been known since the latter part of the 19th century that certain communities, notably in Argentina, India, and Turkey, were chronically ill with premature aging, arthritis, mental retardation, and infertility, and high levels of natural fluorides in the water were responsible. Not only was it clear that the fluoride was having a general effect on the health of the community, but in the early 1920s, Goldenberg, working in Argentina, showed the fluoride was displacing iodine, thus compounding the damage and rendering the community also hypothyroid without from iodine deficiency, highly damaging to the thyroid gland. This was the basis of research in the 1930s of May Litska Gortizer von Muddy, who used fluoride preparations to treat overactive thyroid illness. Their patients either drank fluoridated water, swallowed fluoride pills, or were bathed in fluoridated bath water, and their thyroid function was as a result greatly depressed. The use in 1937 of fluorotyrosine for this purpose showed how effective this treatment was, but the effectiveness was difficult to predict, and many patients suffered total thyroid loss, so it was given a new role and received a new name called Pardonon. It was marketed not for overactive thyroid disease, but as a pesticide. All right, and this bit of history illustrates the fact that fluorides are dangerous in general and particularly highly damaging to the thyroid gland, a matter to which I shall return shortly. While it is unlikely that it will be disputed that fluorides are toxic, let us be reminded that they are Schedule II poisons under the Poison Act of 1972. The dispute is the level of toxicity attributable to given amounts in today's context, the degree of damage caused by given concentrations in the water supply. While admitting its toxicity, proponents rely on the fact that it is diluted and therefore it is claimed unlikely to have deleterious effects. This could not be more mistaken. It seems to me that we must be aware of how fluoride does its damage. It is an enzyme poison. Enzymes are complex protein compounds that vastly speed up the biological chemical reactions while themselves remaining unchanged. As we speak, there occurs in all of us a vast multitude of these reactions to maintain life and produce the energy to sustain it. The chains of amino acids that make up these complex proteins are linked by simple compounds called amides, and it is with these that fluorine molecules react, splitting and distorting them, thus damaging the enzymes and their activity. Let it be said at once that this effect can occur at extraordinary low concentrations, even lower than the 1 part per million, which is the dilution proposed for fluoridation in our water supply. And the body can only eliminate half of it. Moreover, fluorides are cumulative and build up steadily with ingestion of fluoride from all sources, which include not just water, but the air we breathe and the food we eat. And the use of fluoride toothpaste and dental hygiene with the coating and the coating of teeth are further sources of substantial levels of fluoride intake. The body can only eliminate half of the total intake, which means that the older you are, the more fluoride will have accumulated in your body. Inevitably, this means that the aging population is particularly targeted. And even worse, for the very young, there is a major element of risk in baby formula made with fluoridated water. The extreme sensitivity of the very young to fluoride toxicity makes it unacceptable. Since there are so many sources of fluoride in our everyday living, it will prove impossible to maintain an average level of 1 part per million as a suggestion. And what is the result of these toxic effects? First, the immune system. The distortion of protein structure causes the immune proteins to fail to recognize body proteins and so instigate an attack on them, which is autoimmune disease. Autoimmune disease constitutes a body of disease processing troubles many thousands of people, rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus, erythematosus, asthma, and systemic cirrhosis. Cirrhosis are examples. But in my particular context today, thyroid antibodies will be produced which will cause thyroiditis, resulting in the common hypothyroid disease and Hashimoto's disease and the hyperthyroidism of Graves' disease. And musculoskeletal damage results further from the enzyme toxic effect. The collagen tissues of which muscles, tendons, ligaments, and bones are made is damaged. Rheumatoid illness, osteoporosis, and deformation of bones inevitably follow. The toxic effect extends to the ameloblasts, making tooth enamel, which is consequently weakened and then made brittle. Its visible appearance is, of course, dental fluorosis. The enzyme poison effect extends to our genes. DNA cannot repair itself, and chromosomes are damaged. Work of the University of Missouri shows genital damage, targeting ovaries and testes. Also affected is intrauterine growth and development of the fetus, especially the nervous system. Increased incidence of Down syndrome has been documented. Fluorides are mutagenic. That is, they can cause the uncontrolled proliferation of cells we call cancer. This applies to cancer anywhere in the body, but bones are particularly picked out. The incident of osteosarcoma is a study reporting in 1991 showed an unbelievable 50% increase. A report in 1955 in the New England Journal of Medicine showed a 400% increase of cancer of the thyroid, and in San Francisco during the period, their water was fluoridated.
Oh,
and we're still getting fluoridated water,
yeah.
I mean, everywhere. My particular concern is the effect of fluorides on the thyroid gland. And perhaps I may remind you about thyroid disease. The thyroid gland produces hormones which control our metabolism, and that's why we have so many obese people, I guarantee.
That's right.
The rate at which we burn our fuel deficiency is relatively common, much more than is generally accepted by many medical authorities. A figure of 1 to 4 or 1 to 3 by midlife is more likely. The illness is insidious in its onset and progress. People become tired, cold, overweight, depressed, constipated. They suffer arthritis, hair loss, infertility, osteosclerosis, and chronic illness. Man, that's everything Americans are going through, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sadly, it is poorly diagnosed and poorly managed by very many doctors in this country. What concerns me so deeply is that in concentrations as low as 1 part per million, fluorides damage the thyroid system on 4 levels. The enzyme manufacture of thyroid hormones within the thyroid gland itself, the process by which iodine is attached to aminos, acid, and tyrosine. This gets a little technical here, but the stimulation of certain G proteins and so on. Fluoride competes for the receptor sites on the thyroid gland, which respond to the thyroid's stimulating hormone, so that less of this hormone reaches the thyroid gland, and so less thyroid hormone is manufactured. And
oh,
it goes, yeah. And these damaging effects, all of which occur with small concentrations of fluoride, have obvious and easily identifiable effects of thyroid status. The running down of thyroid hormones means a slow slide into hypothyroidism. Already, the incidence of hypothyroidism is increasing as a result of other environmental toxins and pollutions together with widespread nutritional deficiencies. 141 million Europeans are at risk. And this is the last paragraph. One further factor should give us deep anxiety. Professor Hume of Dundee, in his paper gave earlier this year in the Novartis Foundation, pointed out that the iodine deficiency is growing worldwide. There are 141 million Europeans that are at risk. Only 5 European countries are iodine sufficient. UK now falls into the margin and focal category. Professor Hume recently produced figures to show that 40% of pregnant women in the Tayside region of Scotland were deficient by at least half of the iodine required for a normal pregnancy.
Wow.
And a relatively high level of missing, decayed, filled teeth are noted in this non-fluoridated area. Suggesting that the iodine deficiency was causing early hypothyroidism, which interferes with the health of teeth. And dare one speculate on the result of now fluoridating the water. So, displaces iodine in the body. Do you think it should be marketed? Fluoridation of the national water supply will do little for our dental health, but will have catastrophic effects on the general health. We cannot, must not, dare not subject our nation to the appalling risk. So,
okay,
if you want to check this out, go to namastepublishing.co.uk. All right? namastepublishing.co.uk. And the effects of fluoride on thyroid glands. Very frightening stuff.
Yeah, it's 8:36.
Yeah,
so
we're going to
probably
queue
up John's.
Yeah, I already have it queued up, and we're going to listen to John Brennan, our reporter.
Chemtrails.
Yeah, he does an environmental
great
report
job
for us, and especially on the effects of chemtrails, and brings us up to date on current happenings. So please listen, and I hope you enjoy this.
Update. Not a lot of really new information, other than there is a brand new bill that I had missed that went through on March 16th of 2009.
And what was that doing?
Still, is a Weather Mitigation Research and Development Policy Authorization Act of 2009. And it's also known as a bill to establish the Weather Mitigation Research Office and for other purposes, very broad statement there. Again, what I'm going to be kind of talking about, if you're a new listener, is we have discussed on this show many times how airlines are spreading chemicals the atmosphere. These are jets. I'm not talking about little small Cessnas or anything like that. These are not crop dusters by any means. These are very large military airlines. And you, if you were outside today and if you knew about this stuff, you obviously saw the big lines that were leaving in the sky, which, you know, to a person who's not studied this, they would just think it's a condensation trail, but it's not. We have had these operations known as aerial obscuration, done by the military and private and commercial jets, although mostly they are military jets. We've had high-power telescopes check the underbellies of them and the underside of the wings. There's no markings on many of these planes. They actually started this operation, I suppose, going back about 1998, and we called it chemtrails, chemical trails versus contrails, so it's a little different. And we have a lot of proof, and more proof is coming up every day, including the Obama administration now kind of admitting that there's we need to do some, man has to step in to deliberately alter the weather, although they've already done it. They're just kind of breaking the news to the public slowly. And I'll actually play a little audio clip from the mainstream media talking about that. Again, I'm just going to continue with this new weather mitigation. Mitigation is just a nice way of saying modification. It's just another way of putting it. Weather Modification Research and Development Policy Authorization Act of 2009 would be another way of putting it. And this was in the 111th Congress first session, S-601. March 16, 2009, Mrs. Hutchinson introduced the bill and was read twice and referred to the Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. I'm not going to go through it all. It's about three pages. It'll take me too long to read here. So let me get down to some of the nitty-gritty of here. Section 4, number 4, research and development. The term research and development means theoretical analysis, exploration, experimentation, yes, we've seen a lot of that around here, and the extension of investigative findings and theories of a scientific or technical nature into practical application for experimental and demonstration purposes, including the experimental production and testing of devices, equipment, and here's a nice one, materials and processes. Wow, you know, this is so broad, folks. This could include the chemical distribution of these, I guess they're micro-sized particles, like smaller than the size of the asbestos fiber used to reflect sunlight. And we've talked about on the show, you know, the regular listeners will know we've gone through it again and again, so I'm not going to get into it tonight. You can find this, give a website afterwards and seek out the information yourself, the newcomers. You can find all this information many places, but basically what they're doing is now they're trying to just climatize us, if you'll pardon the pun there, to the fact that they're going to be doing it right out in the open. As soon as we have to do it because the Earth's heating up. And Al Gore has helped, of course, nurse this whole thing along, that it's our fault, and never mention the fact that the sun is heating up all the other planets. There's ice caps melting on various other planets right now, and it's not my Suzuki motorcycle causing that, I assure you. Let me see if I can just read a little bit more on this this new bill. I'm just scanning down here. Basically, I've given you I give you a quick summary of achievements of federal weather mitigation research, including federally supported external research during the preceding fiscal year, an analysis of the progress made towards achieving the goals and objectives of the plan developed under Section 6A, including the identification of trends, a copy or summary of the plan required by Section 6A, and it gets kind of technical. Unless you were to read this all in sequence, it might not really make a lot of sense to a lot of people. But certainly, it's a follow-up to the previous bill they had a couple of years ago. I think it was 2005, S-517. It's very similar to that. It's just authorizing it to go ahead for this year.
Did it pass? John, did it pass?
Yes, I believe that's passed. Because all of the others have passed it.
Yeah, John,
was
there any controversy, do you know, or any discussion? Or
any debate?
Or?
Really, there isn't. No, in fact, it was actually, I checked through some of the chemtrail websites, and it wasn't even up, they haven't updated their sites to find it. I came across it researching some story last week, and I actually had it printed out. You can go to the Thomas Library of Congress website and just type in new weather mitigation bill or new weather modification bill. It'll come right up. That's S601, I believe it was. There's probably another house name for it as well.
Does it say who voted for it? Is there
No, I didn't get into that section of it.
But there is a section there, doesn't it?
I think. Yeah, on the Library of Congress, the Thomas Library of Congress, you can definitely find that.
We'll try to check that out.
Yeah, sir. I'm trying to bring up here an audio piece, which I found, and it was from, I think it was CNN, perhaps. I'm not exactly sure it was CNN. Let me see. I should be able to get it. I'm just having a little computer problem here. I'll have it in 1 second. I'm scrolling as fast as I can, folks, to get this audio clip. Yeah, I've got it coming up now. Hang on. Okay, this is, it's actually YouTube, but I can't see the TV. Oh, it's Fox. It is a Fox News. Okay. And they're trying to kind of gradually climatize you here. It's the fact that they can control the weather, even though they've been doing it. They're just kind of making little jokes how kooky it is that we can actually do this. Oh, it is crazy, even though they've been hiring companies. I have an actual name of a company somewhere in the chunk of paper. Here we are. North American Weather Consultants, the world's longest-standing private cloud seeding company. Has their number here, 801-942-9005. They have a full bio here of how they will cloud seed the atmosphere for you. But the level that they've taken it to on the military level now that we see is massive. That's a global modification. These other guys were just doing it for the utility company in the Midwest. I mean, this technology is 50 years old. But anyway, I'm going to play this clip briefly, and I think there might be a little music at the start. It might be distorted, but then they get down to talking about it. So here we go. Oh, I thought here we went. Let me try again.
Back during the presidential campaign, Barack Obama talked about fighting climate change by suggesting at times limits on how Americans could set their thermostats inside of their home. Now the new White House science advisor is talking about much more ambitious ideas, using technology to reset the Earth's climate ourselves, controlling our weather. Is this really possible? Pat Michaels, climatologist, he wrote a book called Climate of Extremes, Global Warming Science They Don't Want You to Know. How are you, sir? Good morning to you.
I'm just fine. It's certainly a kooky idea, I have to admit.
Kooky? We haven't heard that.
Well, it's also not new.
Let me set the stage for you, okay? This gentleman by the name of, hang on 1 second, John Holdren. Okay, he has this idea for how you can go in the atmosphere, literally into space, and alter the weather. Now, what is his plan? Let's explain that first.
The idea is if you took some missiles or whatever and spread sulfate aerosol, it's the same kind of thing that comes out of a smokestack in uncontrolled power plant that we call pollution. See, we put this into the stratosphere, and it reflects away the sun's radiation, and it counters the effects of carbon dioxide in the lower atmosphere causing global warming, so you counter the global warming. It's not the first time it's been proposed. Actually, in the old communist Soviet Union, they had a state-type climatologist named Buiko who proposed that aircraft be given flares on their wingtips, and if they fly low in the stratosphere, that this would counter any possible effects of global warming.
The Soviets had tried this before? Was it effective for them?
They proposed it. They proposed it. They most certainly did. It's nothing new, and, you know, I would love to see the environmental impact statement on this. We have no idea what this would really do. We could, you know, our computer models give us large ranges of what something like this might do, but imagine if somebody in Kansas says, hey, wait a minute, I didn't get my normal rain for 5 years, and I'm blaming the fact that we put this junk in the stratosphere. Secondly, it would have to be a major international agreement. Do you think the Europeans, who won't eat genetically engineered food, are going to allow the United States to put junk in the stratosphere?
Go fat, John, say on that. There's this thing they call cloud seeding, S-E-E-D-I-N-G. And
right.
They put droplets in the clouds to create rainwater. Now, is this a far afield
kind of thunderheads down in the tropics, where you put something in them that makes raindrops coalesce, and you get more rain out of it. This is a much less proven technology, and also a great question up that we got to ask.
What is that?
Okay. What temperature do you want the surface of the Earth to be?
Well, Megan and I just decided on 72 degrees, ocean blue skies, no humidity.
Light breeze.
Why can't
I like that. I'd love to see the international discussion on what it should be. Should it be what it was after the end of the last ice age when it was a few degrees warmer? I said warmer than it is today. Or should it be where it was before we started to burn fossil fuels? In the little ice age, when it was pretty chilly and they brought all those.
We're going to throw out an open invitation for John Horton to come on our air and explain what he would like to do, and then we'll compare your answers with his and see if something like this is possible someday.
See if he will come on a phone.
In the meantime, I want you to know, yesterday, April 8, 2009, it snowed in New York City.
Blizzard.
Have a great day, Pat.
So there you have it. There's just the way they're kind of softening the public up on Fox News, for example. That this is possible, but if, a lot of us write into our local newspapers, they say you're a nutcase, but it's mainstream media now.
Yeah, but the thing is that the way when I was listening to it, this is really goofy, what bothers me about this whole thing, John, I know it bothers you, but this is scientifically proven to be happening. I mean, and skeptics can go to hell on this because this is real. I mean, look at all they got to do is Google up the HAARP program, okay? Google up chemtrails. They'll see it everywhere. They'll see pictures and descriptions and science.
Well, YouTube is the best place to get a real
view
of things if you don't believe it.
Just go to the internet.
And then go from YouTube to the outside and take a look in your own neighborhood what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is so real.
Won't be able to deny what you see.
Yeah, something was funny, John. Tonight I was listening to the news and it said 61% of the people, 61, I love this number, 61% of the people polled said that they don't want to prosecute the Bush administration for torture and for war crimes and everything else that they did, right?
Why not?
Well, yeah, my question, why not? But you know what? It wasn't more than a year ago that 61% of the population still believe that the Iraq war was still, was a good thing. 90% of the military believe that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11
and having weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, and almost everybody still believes that Osama bin Laden is alive or had anything to do, even though he denounced it, and the FBI denounced that he had anything to do with 9/11.
Yeah, and even
right?
The CIA operative, his operative name was Tim Osman.
Tim Osman.
Yeah.
One of the unknown Osman brothers.
Well, they mentioned him on the mainstream media that he's possibly still alive and living in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, he's stirring up the Taliban there.
Yeah.
But it's like, that the whole thing is just a joke. And but it's that 61% that they always throw at you, It's that 61% still don't want any more mention about the torture stuff and that is Cheney and Bush can go away and never be heard from again. All right?
Well,
no, but there's that 40%. Or 39%, okay, that want those guys strung up by their testicles over the Capitol building. You know what I mean?
Well, sure, but if it doesn't happen, the end of America will come about because you'll have the same gangsters will create the same operations, and it's nothing
Absolutely.
To do with Republicans or Democrats. That's juvenile to think about it that way. They have their paid media.
Anybody who thinks that these guys, these criminals, can get away with it, they're not. They're in dreamland, man.
Same treatment as Hitler and his cronies were given. Well, but the high-ranking officers, most of them, unfortunately, ended up coming to America. Perhaps the Nazi ideology never really got wiped out with the Nuremberg trials in Germany.
As we know,
Von Braun.
Yeah, they started the CIA.
Exactly.
These guys were involved with the CIA right at the beginning. All right, Nazis were taken over here.
They moved right over, developed the CIA, and then started started a nuclear program here, and all kinds
rocket
of
program,
yeah, rocket programs
yeah.
and
yeah.
nuclear programs
yeah.
and all
and
kinds
said,
of things.
And Eisenhower was so impressed with their efficiency and their intelligence that he had them their intelligence programs that he set them up over here. Yeah, he brought them in to set something up like that here. So, and that's how the CIA got started. But anyway.
So doesn't that history scare you a little bit, folks?
Yeah.
Well, history will repeat itself.
But the problem is that history, as Americans know it, has been so revised by the media, so revised by the university scholars, so revised by the New World Order manipulators that, you know, they don't know. They don't know any better, you know. So what are you going to do? Anyway, John, what else you got for us there?
Well, I'll just go over a few things. We've 5 minutes, I think, only left here. You know, people will often say, well, what proof do we have and things like that. There's enough proof when you look up and you compare your old photographs, or if you've got the memory, if you worked outdoors, you should know. Just unfortunately, people, you know, it's one of those things you just take it for granted that that was always there. But unfortunately, you know, unfortunately, I would say, the lines that are appearing now were not always left behind the airplanes. And we often get 14, 15-day intervals between massive aerial assaults, which they also know as aerial obscuration. You know, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories has had many scientists. One of them was Ken Caldera, I think that was his name. And they actually spoke out against this aerial spraying. It's also called an aerosol operation. And they actually said that if they were to continue to spray, we wouldn't have blue skies anymore. So, in fact, even our children now have been taught about this in school, in some of the concepts are put forward in the books. There's a level one science book. I think it's called Essential Interactions by Centerpoint Learning. And there's a photo of a jet there entitled Particle Air, and it has the caption, which says jet engines running on richer fuel would add particles to the atmosphere to create a sunscreen. And then we start to search further into the sunscreen concept. There was an article in the New York Times, sorry, Wall Street Journal, can't remember the exact date, but it talked about a sunscreen for planet Earth. And I think guy's name, it's just slipped me now. I have so many names in my mind with all this information. Anyway, he talked about the fact that it would be a great idea to spray these metallic particles that would be, in effect, artificial clouds put in by the jets. And that is what you're seeing. Early in the morning, the best place to see it, if it's a clear, nice sunny day like today, a lot of times they'll spray right across where the sun is, and there's a very good reason for that. That'll be the first place they'll go for, because the heat of the sun helps to expand the chemical and form the cloud. So that's just a little tip off for the people who seen it before.
And the other thing is, if you look at the sky. Look at the sky, and you see it's all murky looking. It's blue. It may be a blue color, but it's all hazy. Yeah, right? It's all swirling hazy, like a light blue color.
You have a nice clear blue sky until the planes come by, and
then
it's that simple.
When they come by, then all you get is this swirling gauze-like clouds that are in the air, and they're not cumulus clouds, they're not cirrus clouds, they're not stratus clouds. All they are is chemtrails clouds, all right? And it just is the most. You have forgotten what the blue looks like. You really have. Once in a while, you get a really clear blue cloud day, blue day, and then within, I don't know, you wake up in the morning and by within an hour and a half or two, they got those damn planes running over it again, you know. And the problem is you have to be able to see this. I mean, if you look in the sky and you see these insane, it looks like insane pilots up there, you know, doing insane maneuvers, okay? You know, a normal airlines, you know, go straight, all right? Maybe they go upwards at an angle. But these guys are going straight up and straight down and making X's and zeros and, you know, it's like they're playing tic-tac-toe in the sky, for crying out loud, all right? And
right.
You can see it. You can just see it. And all you got to do is look up and you got to say, what the hell are they doing up there? You know? And you know that they're doing, you will know if you listen to the show that they are chemtrailing you. And what they're doing is putting these emissions, these chemicals and these particles into the air that are coming down, that are you're ingesting, your kids are ingesting, your animals are ingesting, all right? And they're basically trying to kill you, folks. That's what it is. You know, it's culling the human population.
Yeah, if people want to find out what the chemicals are, because we haven't really gotten into that tonight, you know, and we've only got a few minutes.
Go ahead and mention it. We still got 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, well, some of the findings were actually first, I have to give credit here to Clifford Carnicom, that's Carnicom, Carnicom.com. Clifford Carnicom is a former government scientist who noticed this first, and he took samples to the EPA, and they refused to do any testing for him. So he had other science labs and did his own testing, and he found massive amounts of barium and aluminum oxide. He even found something called erythrocytes, which are, believe it or not, freeze-dried red blood cells. Now, those were not in all the samples, but this is very, very scary because, don't forget, anytime you're being sprayed with anything from an airplane, the chemical could accidentally go wrong. It could be deliberate, but a mistake can happen. So, we should keep an eye on this.
Why are they spraying human pathogen? Why?
Why?
Unless, what does that get to do with weather, you know?
Testing, Leo. It's all testing. They use
it. Of course it is. It's biological, weapons testing, and we're getting hit.
Well, the bill that just passed is the way they can make it legal. When you can hide behind the word research, that's how you legalize it.
Right.
That's the one. It's legal because we were just I read the experimentation parts in there.
Right.
Another interesting thing, I don't know if I spoke of this before, there was a publication which was called Policy Implications of Greenhouse Warming, Mitigation, Adaptation, and the Science Basis, where the conclusion by the National Center for Atmospheric Research is spraying of reflective aerosol compounds into the atmosphere utilizing commercial, military, and private aircraft. I mean, wow, this was unbelievable when I found that. I think if people want proof, just read that document in its entirety.
Yeah.
And it's all there.
That's a good thing for people to know and to read for themselves, and then they can go out and look and think more about it and maybe get together with their friends and be more informed about this. And I'd like to know a little more about that bill.
Yeah, that bill again was S-601. You can read that at the Thomas Library of Congress. Again, it's vague, but if you kind of understand the experimentation and research clauses in there, that's very, I'd use the term like other purposes, that's
right.
Huge. You can
vague.
Cover
that,
so much
that,
with that little
line.
Phrase,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that can get the money towards these weather modification schemes. Another quick thing I want to say, there's a company where you can go on their website, Weather Modification INC, Fargo, North Dakota, and right on their website there, they're just commercial cloud seeders. But go there, folks, and you'll just see typically what's possible at the ordinary sort of man level. You get into the military, of course, level of this on a global scale, the German military, the British, Australian, they're all doing it together. So that's what's going on. We're never to be told.
Oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. So, all right, John. Why don't you throw out a couple of those websites before you leave?
Okay. One of the good websites I like for quick reference is Don't Chemtrail Me, Bro. That's kind of a strange name, I know, but it's a very good website. Don'tchemtrailmebro.com. Another one is chemtrails911.com. There's another one I'd like to go. It's Sophia in California. Her website is known as aboutthesky.com. Bariumblues.com. That's B-A-R-I-U-M. Bariumblues.com, all one word. New York Skywatch. .com has good audio archives there. You can just you'll see all the dates going back to last year. Some of them are very interesting. Some of them are a little let's just say they do a lot of UFO stuff, which I don't know if they're kind of a site set up to try and debunk us, which they often show that stuff in. They'll show like go to Wikipedia, which has been exposed as being a complete joke. They'll always
put in things about Bigfoot and Elvis sightings whenever you type in weather modification, or definitely if you mention chemtrails, they'll absolutely try and...
Well, Wikipedia is a joke, only because what it is, anybody can write, can add to that thing.
Yes, well, no, if you go to, just type in the phrase Wikipedia exposed,
right.
And you'll see a nice article there by Paul Joseph Watson from PrisonPlanet.com, where he basically, he does a very good job. I get the listeners at this stage, they'll just have to go there themselves. It's too late to talk about it.
Right. No, that's okay, but, you know, definitely don't trust Wikipedia. It's kind of a whacked out job, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just go to... something. I go to a dictionary, but Wikipedia is a little rough. You know what bothers me though? If you Google up or go, if you put something in like somebody's name or something, right? Lately, what I've noticed, the first thing they throw you, just a name. The first thing they throw you is the Wikipedia website. Did you know that?
Right. It
comes right up.
Or yeah,
Wikipedia, right? You know, it's like you know. So, you know, most people don't have a lot of time, so they wind up using it. They say, oh, is that what this is? You know, I've done it myself, but I found that anybody can write for this thing. Anybody can update this thing. So
and change it.
And change it, yeah. So it's like, you know, what the hell good is it, you know?
No good. It's not good at all. It's yeah. The most stupid site for finding out information I've ever come across.
Yeah. Anyway. You don't know if it's real or not real, and it's hard to determine. But that's the way it is today, Johnny. We don't, you have to find out from ourselves and from independent researchers, and
Right, you just think of phrases in your head, like history of weather modification experiments, military weather modification, environmental modification, house spills, weather modification, and just use your own head. It'll come to you, folks. It's very interesting if this is something you want to study, because I don't want to be stuck on a respirator when I get old. And basically, I'm just trying to help people out. I don't think
walls with Alzheimer's
should be getting sprayed without their parents' knowledge.
Yep. No, we agree with you, John.
I'm going to keep talking about it.
Yeah, we will.
Well, that's important.
So thanks so much, John, for being on, and we appreciate it. And hope you have a good week.
Okay, that was John Brennan from Litchfield, Connecticut, and he's a very, in my opinion, of course, and many people, he's an expert on chemtrail activity, he's been on a number of talk shows around the country, and we're very pleased that he has been noted as an authority. Or at least a reporter on this subject. So we want to thank John very much, and tell your friends about this program. If you're not familiar with chemtrails, please become familiar with them. It's a criminal action that's happening around the country and around the world, and very, very dangerous. And you can see it everywhere. Just look up, folks. Just look up, and... that's all you have to do. Look up and ask, why isn't the sky blue? And I want to thank you for joining me. And tomorrow night we have a very special interview as well with Richard Grossman, who wrote a remarkable book called The Tao and Emerson. And The Tao of Emerson, rather. And we're gonna play that interview with Richard, and we're also going to I'm going to read from that book. It compares there are passages from the Tao or Lao Tzu, who was the founder of the Tao religion, and Emerson, okay, who was an American scholar and metaphysician and a brilliant philosopher and thinker. Ralph Waldo Emerson. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow on Thursday night. And, of course, on Friday night, we will have George Dixon with us. So I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Thank you for listening, and please join us tomorrow. And good night.